Hello and welcome to the Osteopod. In today's episode, we do something a little bit different. It's not going to be an interview with a med student per se about their med school, but it's an interview with a bunch of med students about some news recently with Step One. So first of all, just want to say welcome to everyone on the show here, a couple of my classmates, fellow fourth year students. Let's start with Tanner, if you want to go first. Or actually, we should go in alphabetical order. How about that? Braden, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about yourself, what specialty you're applying to? Because next week is the match. So let's make some predictions and scramble.
So I'm Braden Anderson, originally from Washington State. And I'm going to do IM, and my top programs are in Texas, actually.
So cool.
I'm hoping to end up in Texas.
Awesome. Cheap places to live, and I guess cheap school. Cheap schools, too. I guess we never didn't take advantage of that.
Nope. If you ever want to go back, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right, Tanner.
Yeah, Tanner Bond. I'm a fourth year at Rocky Vista, also originally from Washington State. Braden and I have known each other for coming up on like 7 or 8 years now from organic chemistry back in the day. Also going into internal medicine and could end up anywhere between North Carolina and Seattle. So really just a toss up, but awesome. A week from now we'll find out if we matched. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. A week from now.
No stress.
Yeah. And I'm going into pathology and I could easily land up anywhere between Vermont and Oregon. So we'll see what happens. Maybe, hopefully right in the middle, somewhere in the Midwest, but.
Maybe northern Midwest, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, in a rural spot. So let's go ahead and talk about something that's been in the news for about a month or 2 months or so, almost three. We're a little late to the game, but I think we're bringing something to the table in this discussion that hasn't been brought up a lot yet, and that's from our perspective. Or the perspective from students in the future who will be DOs and taking the new Step One. So as many of you know, and just as a recap for those who don't know what's going on, and especially for those med students that are coming in that don't even know what Step One is, Step One is a multiple choice exam, board exam, that you take at the end of second year of med school. It is an MD-based test, and so all of the MD schools take it. And some DO schools, ours included, have it required. But DOs can take it regardless if they are required or not. And of course, the DO version of this test is called the Complex Level 1, which is required for us DOs. So it originally was scored, and the Step 2 score, so the one that you take at the end of third year and the first year of residency as well, the old way of scoring Step One, which is the current way of scoring the other two tests, is based on a numerical system. You get a three letter or three number score. Usually 200, 220 or so is like an average score, all the way up to like 270 or something like that. And this change back in January, or a couple months ago, says that the people that are in charge of this, writing this test and testing us med students, said that by the start of January 2022, meaning all the students that will start this year, which is 2020, in the fall, when they become second years, when you guys become second years, you're going to be taking this test and it will be pass or fail. And that's basically the biggest, change that happened there. It looks like, from what I could find, that hasn't happened to the level one test at all, but it might happen.
Yeah, that part is according to the NBOME that put something out on their Facebook and their website February 1st of this year. And they said, yeah, essentially, we know that USMLE Step 1 is becoming pass-fail, and currently Comlex Level 2 PE, which is the clinical skills portion, is pass-fail, and we are going to further study pass-fail for our other board exams, is really what I got out of that.
Right. And a good point there too. There are two tests that you take at pretty much the end of second year, or yeah, third year, at the end of third year. There's another multiple choice test, step two, CK, clinical knowledge, and then that step two CS, the clinical skills. And there's equivalence for DOs as well. So, and thank you for putting the source in here as well, Tanner. We're going to do well with our research month this month. So that's good. So first of all, let's talk about what step one was like versus level one. Because of course this podcast is focused for, you know, DO students like us who we all have to take level one. What are your guys' thoughts on what the test was like, what step one was like versus step two or level one?
I'll go first. So for me, I used UWorld primarily to study for both of them. And I felt like most of our classmates did the same.
Yeah.
I feel like most DOs will study primarily for step one, if they're going to take step one, study for that, and then add in the DO specific stuff for Comlex. And so I felt like step one was extremely vague. That it was nothing like studying for UWorld. The questions felt like they were different, and it felt like I wasn't really understanding what concept they were even trying to test me. It seemed nothing like UWorld. Whereas Comlex, it seemed a lot more straightforward to me. Like, I felt like UWorld was pretty good prep for it, but it was either I knew it and I could answer really quickly, or I had no idea and I had to choose my best guess.
Yeah. You know it or you don't. Yeah.
But I know that after we all took the test, I think it was before second or third year when we all met together, I was talking with a bunch of our other classmates, and some of them had the opposite experience where they felt like step one was really straightforward and much like UWorld, and Comlex level one was really vague and not straightforward at all. And so I don't know if that's just because, you know, they changed the tests on different days, or if, you know, different study strategies, but I think, you know, you just kind of, you do your best with what resources you choose and practice as much as you can.
Yeah. I think my situation was similar to yours, Braden, where I felt like level one was, you know it or you don't. And then step one was definitely like, I don't know what they're talking about per se. It's a bunch of biochem stuff that I know Tanner is a lot better at than I am.
Apparently not.
No. but it was like UWorld was helping you develop the strategy to answer those questions, to make your best guess. Not necessarily knowing the science or the actual answer by the time you read the question, but kind of getting your best chance of getting it right and then moving on. So it's almost like a crapshoot, just how you get lucky. How about you, Tanner?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I remember walking out of step one just thinking, man, did I just screw it all up right there? And then I walked out of Comlex thinking, yeah, there's no way I didn't pass that. That was fantastic. And I think one of the things that you guys really hit on is buzzwords was a big thing. Mm-hmm. That term's, I guess, been in medical education for a while. And essentially it's like, if you were to say stuck on appearance, all of a sudden that's an automatic diagnosis in a medical student's head, but they'll just describe it not as stuck on in step one, but in then level one, they'll say it exactly just like that. And the same went for micro, I thought as well, where it was just very clear. If you knew it, that's what it was. And it was worded exactly how you studied it. So it was very different tests for me.
For sure. Yeah.
Comlex, I thought, was much more manageable, though it was more questions in the same amount of time.
That's true. The actual timing of each test was different. In step one, you got to kind of choose when your breaks were. Mm-hmm. And there were at least, I think, 70 or 80 questions less on step one than there were step two in level one. And in level
130 less. Because wasn't step one was 270, I thought, and then complex was 400. It was either, it was 280. Right.
Right.
Correct. Okay.
Either way, they're definitely, I mean, the questions were, of course, shorter and easier to know how to answer. You weren't, trying to figure out a puzzle or anything, but definitely a lot more questions and a very rigid test taking schedule. Yeah. So I left level one a lot more beat up than step one.
Yes. Sure. And I found it was 280 for step one.
Awesome.
It was 7 sections of 40, whereas Comlex was 8 sections of 50.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Which hurts after a while.
It leaves its mark. One left.
Yes.
Then you do it all again the next year, and then the next year. So that's life, I guess.
Yeah.
But, and of course, so at the end of step one, the reason this test is so important is, at least for us and for the class behind us, that test score was pretty much the standard that a lot of residency programs would use to perhaps screen applicants. I think for the more, competitive specialties, they would definitely have to cut off applicants there because, things like dermatology, radiology, you get paid a lot and you have a pretty good lifestyle. And so I bet a lot of people are going to apply for it. You have to screen all those applicants. And so, boom, you use step one score. And the same goes for, I think, a lot of different specialties as well. And so it's not the only thing, of course, that affects your residency spot. If you have some research or, good CV and things like that, that'll definitely help as well. But there was this unspoken emphasis on step one, and the higher that you got on it, it was almost like the more chances at various specialties that you had or getting into a good competitive residency to begin with. So, but they changed it. And I remember looking at their bulletin saying that, they made this change to put less emphasis on the test. So that way we as students could make ourselves shine in different ways, whether that's on maybe step two or by improving our CV with research or volunteer opportunities and such.
Mm-hmm.
But when you guys saw the news, when you saw, on YouTube or Student Doctor Network or wherever you saw it, I don't know if you guys lurk on SDN anymore, but
I do.
Okay. So he admits it. what were your initial thoughts when you saw that happening?
I personally thought, dang, that would have helped me a lot.
It's like, darn it.
That would have been nice. Because personally, my step one score was pretty meh, average. And then step two did better. So I think, this is all in retrospect and it coulda, woulda, shoulda, but it's like, would I have passed some filters that some programs had set for step one is definitely a thought that comes to my mind. And that's just the narcissistic part of me that's like, man, if I had just been 2 years later, that could have been me. And maybe I could have gotten something more competitive, but I'm happy with where it's at right now. And honestly, I think the pass-fail system is going to be better in the long run. It's just freaky right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. I'm getting that vibe for us and especially for the class behind us too, that, I missed this opportunity by a year or two, and that having gone through all the heartache and blood, sweat, and tears to study for this test is, it just kind of blows,
Well, yeah, it's like, imagine if you just paid off your student loans and then a year later they forgive everyone else's loans.
Exactly.
Sort of that same feel. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, public service loan forgiveness actually works. Free loan forgiveness for everyone. Wait, right?
They actually accept someone now? What?
They actually did. No, I don't know.
No, just kidding.
fourth year jokes.
See, my thoughts were sort of similar. Like that would have been nice to not have to go through all of the stress and anxiety of trying to get the highest score that you could possibly get. But on the other, like in the grand scheme of things, I think it's a good, it's going in the right direction. There's definitely disadvantages, which I'm sure we're going to talk about, that we're all speculating about, cause this is all so brand new, but I think it's a step in the right direction because the step scores were never, or the step exams, the complex exams, they were never designed to filter students for residency positions. A pass fail structure is much, much better to achieve the goal of the step exams, which is, you know, do you meet the minimum level of competence to be licensed?
To take that next step in the right direction.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. And if
get to that next level,
even better.
Oh my God. And like, if the dental profession works under the pass fail system for their boards, why can't we?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Right. And yeah. Anything else to add there, Braden?
Yeah. Just like, there's this guy called the Sheriff of Sodium. Is he a nephrologist, Tanner? That sounds like a nephrologist.
He must be.
Yeah.
Anyway,
if you just search the Sheriff of Sodium, and we can have the link in the footnotes. But
sure.
You know, there's tons and tons of articles that you can read. Everyone has an opinion on this, obviously. I like his view, where, you know, it's sad that we've gotten to the point where a 3-digit score is like the number one determinant on what specialty you get into. And then in that specialty, it's the number one determinant of how competitive you are in that specialty. The advantages of that are obviously because it's standardized. It's, you know, the main, you know, people say it levels the playing field. It's the main thing. You can't really trust letters of recommendation. It's hard to trust all those other subjective measures, you know, for residency directors and program directors. And sure. So the number is easy to, like you said, to filter. But one thing that this guy was saying that I like is that this is an opportunity. You know, we'll see how the chips fall, you know, in the next few years, what really happens. But this is a great opportunity for the medical community to come up with better ways to evaluate us, to actually evaluate our ability to be a physician. And, you know, memorizing a bunch of random facts and answering a multiple choice exam, that's not what clinical medicine is all about. And so there's hopefully, you know, crossing my fingers, my toes, hopefully for the next generation that they'll have some other ways to like be evaluated that will actually translate into, I guess, more realistic, I don't know, like clinical outcomes.
Mm-hmm. If you were to ask me, I think the best way to learn medicine was how they learned it back in good old A.T. Steele's time with like apprenticeships, you know, like if you think about it.
Well, you mean like clerkships?
Or clerkships, you know, yeah, or yeah
you're in fourth year.
Wait, third and fourth like, year. Wait a minute. But no, but seriously, like, I feel like back then you had someone mentoring you, teaching you what they knew. And of course, back then there wasn't, you know, they didn't know as much as we did now. And it might not be as feasible, but it was almost like an unspoken pass fail system. Like you either knew how to cut off a leg or not. I don't know.
Right. Because I mean, for internal medicine, for example, to become a board certified internist, you have to take the ABIM and you either pass or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
No one cares about any score that you get.
Yep.
I mean, it blows my mind as someone, and I'm sure Braden's looked at this too, for fellowships after IM. there are still big step one cutoffs all across the board. If you don't have step one, 230s, 240s, and you want to be a cardiologist, good luck. I mean, the first 2 years of your med school education are going to determine what fellowship you go into. It's just not realistic and really shouldn't be used like that.
And I will say, like, the first thought that I, or one of the first thoughts that I had when I got my score back was, okay, now what specialties can I go into? And is that right?
Yeah, for real.
I don't think so. Like, I mean, and going back to my thought, like, learning medicine, especially the way that we've learned medicine these past third and fourth years, we've actually learned what actually happens in the clinic in the hospital versus the first 2 years where we were taught science and a little bit of clinical medicine. We, you know, would practice on fake patients and stuff. And I remember, you know, trying to learn how to drape a patient and never could pass that part. And that's why I'm going to pathology, but still, like, you're basing your career on a test score and how well you can take a test and how well you could study for a test rather than perhaps some people like myself. I feel like you learn best by doing and seeing people do medicine. And so,
yeah,
I don't know.
Like, step one doesn't tell you your personality type, how good you are at delivering bad news to a patient, talking with nurses. I mean, these are all things that happen on clerkships that really make you who you are as a doctor. And it really,
it's
frustrating.
It is frustrating. You learn important things in the first 2 years, but you learn a lot of really important clinical information, not only the science behind it, but the actual skills that you need to be a successful physician.
Yeah. Right. I feel like in every rotation that I, like every new specialty that I started rotation in, you have to figure out, like, okay, what's actually relevant that I learned in the first 2 years to clinical medicine? Because there's like textbook, there's like board study medicine is one type of medicine.
Right.
Then there's textbook medicine, which gets a little bit closer. And then there's, you know, medicine that you learn from journal articles, which is a step closer to reality. And then there's what you actually see and what people actually practice on a regular basis. And those are all different. And it's so frustrating having to remember, like, oh, I learned all of these things for these diseases and it's irrelevant for clinical medicine because of, you know, how patients actually present is almost never in the classical symptoms, which we, you know, had to memorize so heavily.
Right. And if it happens, it's just like, whoa, you know, that never happens.
Yeah, it's exciting when someone actually presents the textbooks.
Right. I don't think anyone ever really understood what heart failure was and looked like until they got on rotations. I thought, did I learn about this during med school?
Like, heart failure is VTAC, right? That's just, the heart fails to stop, right? Once again, pathologist speaking. Anyway, just kidding.
I mean, that blew my mind.
I'm just kidding. It was a joke. So moving on, now, you know, we know that step one, I think we all agree that it is, as they say it is, a step in the right direction on testing our knowledge, at least giving us a fairer evaluation of our knowledge, you know, coming out of the first 2 years of med school. Mm-hmm. And so once again, going back to the point that step one is such a big tool to evaluate our applications for residency. So now what, you know, not only how does this pass-fail system affect MDs and doctors in general, but how does it specifically affect us as DOs? And I should say, I guess the future DOs that are going to take this pass-fail test. In kind of in general, just to start off too, I don't think things like Pathoma, Sketchy, UWorld, First Aid, I don't think those are going to go away, you know, per se. I try to look this up and see how they're going to grade this new test. Who knows if they are going to grade it the same way, and instead of just giving you a number, they just give you a pass or fail and then make a cutoff at like 200 or something, 190, 180, what have you.
Whatever it is that they keep bumping up
Yeah, right. Every single year. And, or is it going to be like a shelf exam? And for those who don't know what a shelf exam is, they are like mini step two exams that you take at the end of your core rotations. We had to take the MD version, the NBME step shelf exams. And the bottom 10th percentile, you know, 10% of students, they would get a fail on that. And the top 90th percentile gets a pass, you know. Is that, that sounds right, right?
I'm pretty sure it's school-based.
So oh, is it school-based?
It is.
The school determines the percent.
Yeah.
The percent. You just, everyone gets a score or a percentile, and then each school determines where the cutoff is for pass or fail. Or
and unfortunately, Rocky Vista is one of the more stringent from what I've heard. A lot of MBE students I've talked to said it was like second or third percentile and below would be a fail.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well,
we, yeah. Really push us hard, Rocky Vista. Yeah,
I've talked about other, or I know other med schools that use 50th percentile.
What?
As the cutoff for pass and fail.
Wow.
They have a lot more fails.
Yes. Wow.
They have, but yeah,
that's funky. So, okay,
that's crazy. Well,
so it is kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
So you can't even look at grades for rotations to evaluate people, but. That's another day.
That's definitely another conversation. But you know, would they do the same thing to step one now? Would they just globally, out of everyone who took the test that day, give a fail to the bottom 10%? You know, or what have you? So, I think that will determine whether you succeed or fail on this exam. Once again, I don't think the resources that we use to teach ourselves would change. I still see this being a tough test, and in order to pass in the first place, I still think you need to study hard. And
yeah, there's no skimping on studying for this one bit. If anyone thinks they're going to be able to just glide right over and get a pass, they're going to fail it.
Right. So I don't think that necessarily is going to change the way that you study for this test. But I do think it does change the way residencies are going to look at med students. And I think it might change the way that they look at DO students as well. But I guess in a way that I think that residency programs, especially the ones that are more competitive, now that they can't look at step one, they're going to need a new evaluator of us as applicants. And if they are getting, you know, these top ranking programs for whatever specialty you have, if they're getting like 500, 600 applicants, which that's how many, some places got that I interviewed at in pathology, which is not considered too competitive. How are you going to look at every like resume and every CV of these applicants, you know? Are you going to filter them out? Because you have to filter them out, I think. Are you going to do that based on how many research publications that they've gotten? Their step two grade, maybe. Maybe they'll require you to take step two before applying, which I think most of us did.
Well, and most for DOs, definitely.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. So I think another thing that I think might affect DOs as well, that probably doesn't change, you know, from now and later, is that we as students, we were encouraged by our school, Rocky Vista, to go out and do audition rotations. I learned from a student from the University of Utah that that sub-internships are basically like a normal rotation at their teaching hospital, and they just go and they get a little bit more responsibility. Versus for us, when I looked at a sub-internship, it was more of an opportunity to go and show that you know some material, get that extra responsibility, shine a little bit, so that way you make a good impression, and they give you the interview that you're working hard for, that you kind of have to earn because you're a DO, you know. Maybe I'm a little bit biased there, but I think that those audition rotations will be more important. Perhaps your score on step two or level two or what have you will be more important as well. Maybe they just look at your level one score instead of your step score and use that number to screen people. I don't know.
I think it's it's really fair to say that now that they can't use step one, which, you know, previously residency program directors reported as one of the number one, you know, like most important things. The number one most important thing in screening applicants. And now that they don't have that, I think it's really fair to say everything else in your application is going to be more important. But exactly what and to like what degree, you know, the chips will fall, and we'll find out in a few years.
But, we'll find out. Because I believe number two on that was step two for their preferences.
Really?
Yeah.
At least step for two, internal.
It wasn't far behind. Yeah. I don't know exactly
where it was,
but it was close. So yeah, step two, until they make that pass fail, if they do. That's going to become the new step one, because like you were saying, they have to have something to quickly screen applicants, because it's just, otherwise it's just, it'd be impossible for them to actually do that. They need some way, you know, imperfect or perfect, they need some way to filter students. The next easiest way to do it is a step two score. But I think it's also fair to say that, you know, the other things, your research, your volunteer
letters of recommendation,
all of that stuff is going to become more important. So you know, some specialties, if you got a really high score, you might be able to kind of, you know, blow off a little bit of, you know, the other extracurricular stuff on your CV, but now you might not be able to, you know, have that latitude. If you're a DO applying to programs that don't typically take DOs, you're going to have to work harder, because they're unsure. They're unsure about you. Just like a program who's used to taking Ivy League students, they're unsure about taking, you know, MDs from lower tier MD schools. You know, love it or hate it, that's kind of the way it is. So
pedigree is a big thing in a lot of academic medicine, at least. I've been perusing a lot of the subreddit and Google Drive spreadsheets kind of stuff. And I mean, it's almost guaranteed. You can see someone, let's say they did average on step, let's say like 220s, something like that, a little bit below average. They do that on step one, and you see like, oh, they got interviews at Brigham and Women's, Mass General. And then you see that they're from a top 10 med school, and it's like, okay, that makes sense now. And a lot, pedigree does make a lot of difference now, and I think it's just going to make more of a difference now with this pass-fail. But it's not like DOs. I mean, yeah, you'll get the occasional DO that goes into one of these upper-tier programs, but I don't think it's going to change a lot of that upper echelon kind of factoring in.
I think you bring up a good point. Like, when I listen to podcasts about, like, the DO bias towards, you know, or against us in medicine, when you get out and practice medicine, like, you know, in the clinics and the hospitals and stuff, at least the your average hospital, there's no difference, there's no bias at all. But I think all that bias is coming towards us when you're talking about those high-end academic locations and
ivory tower type stuff.
Ivory tower type stuff. And so it's I guess that's just reality, and you can't change people's minds or traditions, you know, that easily.
And that'll just take time, I think.
Yeah.
I think, you know, my advice for DO students who this is going to affect could be, you know, if you killed the MCAT and you're super good at standardized tests, then do your best to kill step two, and hopefully that'll be great. But even if you do have those skills, it's going to be important to make time to try and do, you know, research or leadership, definitely leadership and volunteer activities, regardless of what specialty you want to go into. But, depending on what specialty and then where you want to go in that specialty, quality research experience will also, you know, really, really set you apart. Because, you know, residencies, especially more competitive residencies, they and academic programs, they want people who can do research. And so my advice for those people is keep on doing what you're doing, you'll do great with step two, and that'll help you. But don't forget these other things. And then for those of you who maybe didn't do so well on the MCAT and who are anticipating not doing so well, you know, on step two, this is probably a good thing for you that it has become pass fail. But again, now you need to make sure that you shine in other ways. That it's really important for you, if you don't anticipate having good test scores, to really seek out, you know, good long-term quality extracurricular experiences to boost your CV.
Yeah. And I think a lot of this goes to what your career aspirations are. If you're, I think, taking a step back, if you are a pre-med student looking to, you know, if you already have an idea of where you want to go, and let's say it's a more competitive specialty that you, you know, hear about us talking about or hear other people saying, yeah, this is really competitive, then if you want to go to a prestigious, you know, location or a high ranking, you know, a really competitive specialty, then you go down the route of trying to get into an MD school, whether that takes a little bit longer to get into or not. Yeah, I agree that it takes effort, of course, but it doesn't take as much effort, I think, to get into a DO school. And so if you're fine getting into, you know, going to a DO school, getting into school a little bit earlier, perhaps not, you know, maybe taking a year or two to, you know, apply to an MD school to get in, and you're fine with certain specialties in certain locations that are not as academic or not as prestigious, then yeah, you know, you go ahead and go down the route of a DO. You don't need to worry about that. But if you, and so it's a little bit harder if you already are a DO and you suddenly find out that you want to be in a certain place. I agree with you, Braden. I think you have to, you know, take some time to do some research, to get some good letters of recommendation, go and rotate at some of these places to get those good academic letters of recommendation. Even if it takes an extra year, you know, if you take a fellowship, you know, post-sophomore fellowship or
a research year.
Yeah, I know students that have done that. And
that's not the norm. So you shouldn't expect to have to do that.
Right.
But if that makes sense for your goals and where you want, then
yeah
that can be fantastic.
It all depends on what you want in your career. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tanner, do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I just want to, I'd love to see where future DO schools are going to go with this. Because actually right now, well, as of a couple months ago, Rocky Vista was the only school to require USMLE step one for students. And I think LECOM is sort of jumping on the boat with that. Mm-hmm. But some DO students would take the option of saying, I'm not even going to take step one and I'm just going to take step two. And they would be like, well, it's only one more board exam. It's great. It's easy. Now I can just take that one. But now to even take step two, you have to take step one.
Yeah.
So just another $100. It's a little frustrating. It's not everyone's situation, but you know, I'm just excited to see if more DO schools will pick up the trend of requiring step one. Because unfortunately on a lot of interviews, I'd talked to other DO students that said their school very much said, do not take it, just take complex. You'll be fine. Which I think is doing their students a disservice. So I'm hoping this sort of relaxes the administration a little bit and says, hey, maybe we should encourage this. It gets your foot in the door, but time will tell.
Yeah. And to those who are going to a school that may not require it, I echo what Tanner says. And I think you should seriously consider taking it because it might do you more good to do it and get your foot in some doors that perhaps weren't open beforehand.
Yeah.
And regardless of if it's a scored test or it's pass fail. So I totally agree. Braden, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I really hope that, I guess along the lines of this going in the right direction, I hope that this de-emphasizes step one material in the first 2 years of school. A lot of it is, I mean, you have to understand the basics of physiology, and pathology, and biochemistry. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all good, but I hope that I guess what I felt is that the focus was on the in-depth, like biochemical knowledge of physiology, the pathophysiology. And then as a side note, you got stuff on, you know, you're taught about clinical medicine. I know many of our professors would rant about how they were so mad that they had to teach this material for the step when they knew it was useless for clinical medicine, and they just wanted to teach that. So I hope that the de-emphasizing step one, maybe emphasizing step two, will allow, you know, all of these clinical professors to be able to teach more clinical medicine and have the step one type material still there and still present, but not be at the forefront, the first priority, but that we know enough to be successful, but with the actual focus, the real priority of the first 2 years is beginning to develop that, you know, the ability to do clinical medicine, you know, forming differentials and not just learning diseases in you know, isolation of each other, but being able to form differentials and be able to know what to do before you hit the clinic, long before you hit the clinic, of what diseases are based on, you know, patient presentation and not just systems or things like that. So I, crossing my fingers again, hopefully the first 2 years of med school will change as well to highlight, you know, clinical medicine.
Definitely. And
I like it.
I like it too. I think that's a, you know, I really, I don't know. That's like an idealistic, way of thinking about what medicine should be like. And I think, yeah, step one, becoming pass fail, has a good chance of leading to that. So, all right. Yeah. So Braden, Tanner, thank you guys for joining me tonight on the osteopod. Yeah. The osteopathic podcast is what it stands for.
Oh.
Fun trivia fact if you ever want to know. But for all those who are listening, thank you for listening to our little discussion here. And if you like it, go ahead and leave a like, you know, and rate this podcast highly, so that way the word kind of spreads, and go ahead and do some spreading of your own. You know, go on Reddit, Student Doctor Network, and let people know about this podcast, especially those students who are just about to apply to med school and are thinking about DO school. I think this podcast is really helpful for them and kind of gives you a leg up on your applications. So like it, subscribe, share it, spread the love, and we'll catch you on the next one.